blind like me. It's Phil Farr. Suzanne Bird is our guest, and how are you this morning, ma'am?
Oh, I'm fine, thanks. And you?
Well, I'm doing well. As I said, for an old man, I'm doing about as well as one can be expected, I suppose. You are, where are you, or what is your city? Where are you located?
Well, I'm in Philadelphia, city of brotherly and sisterly love.
City of brotherly and sisterly love.
That's right.
At the same time.
Yep.
Big city.
Mm-hmm.
Big city. Lived there all your life?
No. I was actually born in Japan. I was an army brat, and I came out about 3 months prematurely because I wanted to see Japan. So I wound up being blind instead, but I did see Japan.
Now, you were born in Japan. Your father was stationed there.
That's right.
Was this during the Second World War?
No, I'm not that old.
You're not.
This was in 1956, actually.
Yeah, so the Second World War was long since over.
That's right.
Well, we still had many troops stationed there, and we were still in the process of rebuilding that nation, weren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was there for about, I guess a good 6 months.
But you don't remember any of that.
No, I don't. I wish I did.
You've been told about it, but you don't remember. And your mother and father were on a military facility, and so they spoke English.
Yes.
So you never did learn Japanese?
No. Unfortunately, I never did. Although, a few years ago, I went to Japan with a friend of mine who was teaching at a mission school in Okinawa. And I learned a few words of Japanese.
And did they attribute your blindness to your prematurity or what?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did they have facilities there to deal with that? I mean, did they realize right off that this poor little girl cannot see?
No. My mother noticed it because I wasn't following her hands when she was playing with me in the bathtub. My eyes weren't following her hands.
Yeah.
And so she told the doctor, and he said, well, why don't you just wait till you get back to the States and they can see what's going on. And so when I got back to the States, they found out.
Well, not that they could have done anything, but because the damage was probably already done by then.
Mm-hmm.
Optic nerves, like my optic nerves didn't develop.
Yeah.
Maybe the same condition with you.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved back to the States about 6 months after you were born.
Mm-hmm.
And your daddy continued in the military? Or
what? Yep. So I got to see a little of the world. And we were in Germany for a while. And my mother is actually German. So
oh, yeah?
I did. Yep. So I did learn a little German. And we had relatives over there. So besides the regular German army tour, I got to know my mother's side of the family.
Okay. Yeah.
And of course the kids, the only thing they knew how to say in English were stinky feet or stinky feet. And but you know, they got to know us after a while, you know, the kids over there, and they didn't have any special services for blind preschoolers, to my knowledge, on the base or anything. I was the only one. And so I just, you know, played with the kids.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask today. What did they have for blind children? I guess nothing.
Nothing. But then I came back. We came back to the States when I was five. And my dad was stationed in Philadelphia, and so then I went to Overbrook.
Yeah. which is a wonderful place for blind children to go, from what I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been there, don't know anything about it, but I've heard that it is a wonderful facility for blind children. So you went to Overbrook is it in Philadelphia? I mean, were you a daytime resident or
no? At the time when I was there, most kids were residents. So even though I lived pretty much in Philadelphia, and Overbrook itself is in Philadelphia, but Most of us boarded. I think maybe I knew one or two day students, maybe three.
But most of you stayed in the dormitory there.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there were some good aspects of that, because I think I developed certain qualities that I might not have developed as well if I had been at home,
like
a regular public school.
What are you thinking?
In some ways, I had to learn to be a little bit. I don't know. You could sort of make counter arguments either way, but I think that having Braille available to me from the time I was in kindergarten was really good.
Well, yeah.
Because I really feel sorry for totally blind kids that have to depend so much on tape, because reading is so important.
So I gather that you were a Braille reader and a Braille person.
Yep.
Mm.
Yep, I'm one of those.
One of those. Well, one of those most successful blind people are.
Yep, I think so. I think so.
Not being a Braille person at all, It galls me to have to say that, but most successful blind people who are successful are Braille users of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
I've come to believe that's true. You might not have convinced me of that 5 years ago, but since I've done all these interviews. So you learned Braille and took to it well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was great. I was a great one for having books under my pillow and reading at all hours of the night. I still do.
Reading, laying in bed, reading with your hands under the covers.
Yep.
That's right. So you didn't need light, and they didn't know you were reading, and they'd have no...
That's right.
Yeah, because I remember my wife telling about stuffing rags under the door so she could read and they wouldn't see her light. Yeah, because she has always been an avid reader. Besides that, at going to a boarding school, you were forced to do things, maybe take care of your clothes a little better, or learn to do things that you might not have been forced to do had you stayed home.
That's right. Because my mother was very, very particular about my appearance, and so she would insist on doing things her way, and sometimes if she didn't like the way I had done or I hadn't done it perfectly, then she would just go ahead and do it, and
rather than teach you how.
That's right.
So yeah, you may have, and you were around other blind children.
Yep.
You got to see some other, but did you come home on weekends or not?
Oh yes, I did. Yes, I did come home on weekends. I was lucky because I had both. I lived close, and mm-hmm. my father left the military and went to seminary and became a minister. And
really?
So we were active in the church. So I did get some socialization at home anyhow, no matter what. Of course, I was preacher's kid, and you know what they say about preacher's kids.
No, what do they say about preacher's kids?
Well, they say that there's nothing like army brats and preacher's kids.
And you were both.
And I was both. But I was, I don't know, there was something wrong with me, because I was good. I was a good student. I enjoyed reading. I was very quiet, though. People always used to say I was very quiet, but then they always used to say when I had something to say,
Well, not to be derogatory, but I would never have thought of you as a quiet. You seem to be a good talker.
I am now. I think part of it was that, you know, I was sort of raised to be a nice, proper young lady.
Good.
And I think that as you go through life, you learn after a while that, well, sometimes it's appropriate to be a nice, polite young lady, and sometimes it's not.
Well, you know, when I put on my tape yesterday, when I called you to set up an interview with you, I put on the tape Suzanne Erd. I think she'll be a good talker.
Mm-hmm.
Because the good talkers are easy to interview. The ones that aren't are very difficult to interview.
Oh, I can imagine.
I said, good. I think she'll be a good talker. But as a child, you weren't. You were reticent. You were quiet.
Well, I was reticent. If I had something to say, if I was interested in the topic, then I would talk. But I got yelled at a lot for when I was real little for touching everything in sight, so to speak.
You got fussed at for that? They didn't like that?
No, they slapped my hands a little bit, you know.
I wonder why.
Well, I guess maybe there are some things they thought I shouldn't touch and things, but... You know, I think that's not good. I think it's really good for blind children to have access to every single thing they can get their hands on, as long as it's not going to hurt them. And even if it hurts them a little, they have to learn consequences of their actions.
How do you know a stove is going to burn you unless you touch it?
That's right. And that doesn't mean you have to touch it hard, but just get your fingers close enough to it so that you have a healthy respect for it.
Yeah, so that you realize that it's going to, it could hurt you.
That's right.
And so you graduated from high school. What did you do in school? Were you a music student or what?
Well, actually, I left Overbrook at the end of ninth grade, and I went to public school. And then I went, I went to Bryn Mawr College, and I was a music student there. They didn't really have a performance major, but they had a music history major, and I sort of turned that into a theory, music theory and performance major just because I did.
Why was the decision made to leave Overbrook? What prompted that?
Well, I think it was partly due to the school districts believing that they could do it more cheaply. I think in the early 70s, right before 94-142, you know, that first federal law to educate children in the least restrictive and
I do not free. I am not familiar with that law. Can you tell us about it? Do you know about it?
A little bit. It was and perhaps maybe an education person might be interested in clarifying that later, but it's a law. It was a law that said that it would be preferable for children with special needs, as they refer to it, to be educated in the least restrictive and most appropriate setting, which in some cases would mean the local public school. And they were concerned about people... about school districts not allowing children to be educated in their in their school closest to their home. And I think that there are some, of course, there are pros and cons to both. And I don't want to go all through that, but I think that both sides, I think there are some children for whom a school for the blind is appropriate, and I think there are some children for whom public school is appropriate. And I think that sometimes I wish there were more instances where schools for the blind and the public schools work together. In my case, when I left Overbrook, it was just one or the other. And I think it could have been very helpful if my teachers at public school had perhaps had access to information from Overbrook, and perhaps even meetings with some of the teachers that I had had at Overbrook. That shouldn't be such a difficult thing to arrange, and I don't know why it didn't happen when I was there, but it certainly didn't. And as a matter of fact, they put me in driver's ed, so I took driver's ed.
Well, I think that is becoming more common. I think the students, the high school students at the Texas School for the Blind now go to take some classes at public school rather than take all their classes at, I think they may live at the Texas School for the Blind and receive their mobility training and some training at TSB, but I think they take basically their academic curriculum is done by McAllen High School in Austin. So the merging of the two in Texas, at least, has happened.
I like that idea.
I do,
that's,
too.
That sounds good.
I do, too. I think that's good, except that they said that with a couple of people that I've talked to said all the blind kids stayed together and
oh, that's not good.
The sighted kids just ignored them. I mean, it's like, you know.
No, that's not good.
Well, of course, we're in the same thing with segregation. The children of color stay together, and the others stay together. So we're I don't know, but they decided to put you in public school, but there was no collusion or connection between the Overbrook people and the public school people. You were simply put in public school.
Now I wanted to go, and I sort of helped the situation along because I there was a I'm not sure exactly what her position was, but there was a woman who was in the administration of Overbrook, and she believed that I would do well in public school, and she agreed with me. I wanted to try something new. I figured I had been at Overbrook from kindergarten to end of ninth grade, and I was ready to try something new.
Yeah.
And I thought that going to public school would be cool, you know? And so I did. And she spoke with my parents, and they worked on it. And actually, I was okay. I was in some plays and things, and I was on the honor roll, and I was involved in a lot of other organizations. I was on class congress, and I was pretty active in high school
as a high school student.
Yeah,
in
public school, although I didn't really go out on many dates, and I think that was, I was kind of disappointed about that.
We've discussed that a lot. You may have heard some of the shows. Sighted, a 16-year-old sighted child, boy especially, don't know much about how to handle themselves, much less take on a blind child, a blind
That's
girl.
That's for sure.
And you know, 16-year-old boys, I remember being a 16-year-old boy, and there were a couple of sighted girls that lived across the street that I probably could have had some fun with or had some dates with, but I didn't. I wouldn't approach them because it just seemed. I don't know. You're very shy at that time of your life.
Yeah.
You were very, 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 very insecure. And so you can understand. I've talked with several girls who went to public school and did very little dating. Because a sighted 16-year-old boy wouldn't know how to would have a hard time dealing with you. I tell you, let's take our first little break here.
Okay.
We want to get into your life. You have got degrees, I think a couple different ones, and did a lot of college work, work with your music. We want to talk about all that. Our show is called Blind Like Me. Suzanne Erd is our guest. I'm Phil Parr, and we'll be right back if you'll hang on just a minute, all right?
Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sites, here's Tim Cummings.
Let's say you want to send somebody a large file. Now, most email programs have a problem that you can't send a file over a certain amount to somebody. Well, you should try www.sendspace.com. That's sendspace.com. This is a great site. You can upload a file to somebody, and what you do is you just type in the file name and upload it, then you type in the person's email address of the file that you're going to send them, and then you type in your email address if you want a copy of the link as well, and you hit send. And what this does is it uploads the file to a website and sends that person an email with a link in it where they can go and grab that file and download it to their own computer. It's a great site. It's very accessible. I'd give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. And the nice thing about it, too, is it's got a little counter, so it'll actually tell you how long it'll take to upload the file. Now, obviously, if you're running a cable connection or a DSL connection, it'll upload faster than if you're sending it via modem. But that's www.sendspace.com. I'd give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 10. And for Blind Sites, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sight.
Our guest is Suzanne Erd from Philadelphia, the city of sisterly and brotherly love. We decided the home of Overbrook School, the Overbrook School for the Blind, one of the most famous, one of the oldest and most famous schools. And you attended there through ninth grade, then you went to public school, high school, graduated from a school there in Philadelphia, and you were a music student, and I would guess piano.
That's right. And I also studied a little bit of organ while I was at Overbrook. And then when I went to college, I did a little bit of voice study. And I enjoyed that. And I like to sing as well as play. And
and of course, that helped in high school also.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing being a music person, because I'm sure that this was you were born 56, so we're in the early 70s. So I'm sure you might have even played a little rock and roll for them, a little.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Because you know, I think like so many of us, you know, you'd sit there and you'd memorize the songs that you'd hear on the radio, and you'd just sit down and play them.
Did you were you a Carole King fan?
Yeah.
You were.
Mm-hmm.
So was I.
Mm-hmm.
too late, baby, now it's too late. Just is one of my very, I'm a country music enthusiast, but that is one of my very favorite songs. She she just sang that and did that so well and so nicely. And you probably played that same song.
Yep.
Many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought, look at the little blind girl that can play that piano. Just look at her.
That's right. And, of course, you know, that was your entree, really, into parties.
Your ticket, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, that's basically how I'd get to go to things a lot, just because I could sing and play.
But none of those brave little boys came up and said, you know, I like her. She...
No. and even in college, I didn't have that many dates, and I had a few. But you know, in Bryn Mawr, you know, it was a women's college.
Oh yeah.
And we had we had our thing about Haverford men. You know, the men were at Haverford and the women were at Bryn Mawr, but we all took classes at Haverford and lived at, you know, in each other's colleges and everything, and I was actually in a single sex dorm, but we had men who actually lived in a single sex dorm. We figured out ways to do that, and but I had a good time in college because I was able to be musical. I was appreciated, and I was appreciated for who I was. Because Bryn Mawr, I think, was a sort of unique place where there were a lot of people that were interested in books and ideas and really weren't as concerned with what you looked like, how you presented yourself. And so I felt as though I was, if not completely understood, at least somewhat appreciated. And so I had a good time, and I got to do lots of things that I might not have had a chance to do otherwise, because I met through meeting some of the people that I got to meet, I might not have met them otherwise.
Uh-huh.
And I got to go to Japan, as I said, to visit a friend of mine who was teaching. And we also went to Europe together and went to Germany and Austria and
really?
All sorts of things. I enjoy traveling.
You know, not to belabor this point about you not dating or not having many boyfriends, I think there is an awful lot of eye contact that goes on during the early stages, and there's a lot of eye contact that you and I miss.
Mm-hmm.
Because we can't make that eye contact, and we, you know, this that those they used to talk about come hither glances and things like that in back in the days of when music was a little different and when things were a little different, and I think there's a lot to that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do if I get time and had the money, I would like to do a study of why I would be attracted to a girl, to some girls, and I wouldn't be attracted to others, because it certainly wouldn't be looks.
Right.
Why would you be attracted to certain men and not be attracted to others? Because it certainly wouldn't be the way they looked, and basically sighted people go by physical appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. That would be a really interesting study. Now,
yes.
Hey, maybe I could do that as a doctoral dissertation if I ever decided to go back.
That would be wonderful, and if you decide to do that, I want to help. I want to get a panel discussion together and discuss that with other blind people, because I know what I know why I am attracted to certain women and not attracted to others.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no idea why you would be, or any other blind person. But there is some, it certainly isn't eye contact or the pretty blue dress you're wearing.
Right.
It isn't,
you know, that I think would be, I don't know, if the AER puts out a call for papers or something, that would really be an interesting topic. I really wonder if in the whole rehabilitation field, they seem to shy away from some of these topics that I think are really important.
Well, they wouldn't shy away from them if they were blind. They shy away from them because they're sighted people and they don't know how to quantify.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how to say what you and I are trying to. Well, you get us a grant and we'll do it.
All right.
You get us a grant and we'll. Well, I'll get the people together and I'll do all the recording and we'll do a massive study on why blind people are attracted to other people but you got to think about the three blind mice. That must have been genetic. How in the hell would they have met each other if it hadn't been? Yeah, there was something going on there. All right.
That's right.
Let's move on with your life. Bryn Mawr College, and you were studying music there. Is that a college noted for its music department or what?
No, not necessarily, but it's known for its academic standing. And I was interested in lots of things besides music,
mm-hmm.
but I thought that music... music really is my first love, and so that's what I majored in. But because Bryn Mawr has very high academic standards, and there were people there who were taking lots of things that I didn't have time to take, but because I got to talk with lots of interesting people and spend a lot of time with people, talking at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning and having all those good philosophical discussions about everything. I think I got a really well-rounded education, and I'm glad I had that opportunity. There are some things, though, that I wish I had been better prepared for life. Because I had a really rude awakening when I graduated, because I had been in this nice ivory tower
cocoon.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Were you getting a degree in music? Were you getting a degree in what were you trying to get a degree in?
Well, I actually, it was a liberal arts degree. But,
okay.
It was a concentration in music.
All right, and when you graduated and did this in 4 years, or?
Yeah. Yeah. And then...
And then it was time to find a job.
Yes.
Oh, my. Now we come to, as they would say in England, the sticky wicket.
That's right.
Now we come to the sticky wicket. It's time to find somebody that'll hire little Suzanne to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Besides... work in a call center,
or
sell brooms door to door, or tune pianos, or cane chairs, or
mm-hmm.
or do something blind thing. It's time to use that degree. Well, tell us about it and how you faced it.
Well, I took the first job offer I got.
Which was
working as sort of a life skills education instructor, which is really funny because here I was, right out of college. I didn't know the first thing about life, but what I did basically was arrange for speakers and things and have classes on various topics. And so I had a lot of fun. And we did a, it was with the what we used to be the Philadelphia branch of the Pennsylvania Association for the Blind, which really, you know, that whole thing is changed now. Everything is done under Associated Services for the Blind. But that was a fun year for me because I learned a lot.
But you were teaching other people blind life skills.
Yep.
Yet you didn't really have any.
That's right.
That's amazing.
I had a few, but I was winging it, and it wasn't actually teaching, like, it wasn't actual rehab teaching, but it was, say, helping people, you know, we had maybe classes in, using a checkbook or... we had speakers come and talk to us. We had somebody come in and teach a home repairs course. And we did a few things like that. And we had someone come and, and teach knitting and crocheting. And, you know, different things like that.
Now, this person who taught home repairs, was this a blind person or
sight? No, this was a sighted person.
Well, wrong, because they're not going to know how to do home repairs as a blind person.
Mm-mm.
They're not going to realize that when you're repairing plumbing under a sink, if you're blind, you don't have to stick your head under the sink. You can put your hands under there, and you can keep your head above the sink and do what you have to do because you don't have to see.
That's right. That's right.
But they didn't know that.
No.
You know, of course, about our blind handyman show that we do. And, they should have had me teaching that, or one about Don Shaw or somebody.
That's right.
That's
right.
Okay, so came in and taught some home repairs to some people who were interested, knitting and crocheting. How about how to operate the washing machine?
No, they didn't do that, because this wasn't strictly a rehab program. It was supposed to be more a cross between recreation and sort of quality of, you know, improving quality of life. It wasn't actual rehab. But we did some fun things too. We had parties where, you know, people, we would make things. I remember the first time I ever had sweet potato pie was we decided to have a Christmas party, and somebody made things, and we brought them in, and we had a party, and that was really great. And I think some people may not have made things themselves, but I think most people did. And there were times when we would go to this little fast food place for lunch, and you didn't have to cross the street or anything, and we didn't have anyone who could see going with us.
Uh-huh.
And I just, you know, that was just my idea, and you know, no volunteers, no nothing, and we just walked around the corner and went to the place, and I think some people said to me later on, well, why didn't you all just sort of order lunch and have it delivered? I said, we're gonna walk around the corner, and we did, and there were some people that were with me that said, gee, this is the first time I've ever done anything like this. And maybe sometimes when you're a young kid and you're fresh out of college, you're willing to try all kinds of things.
Oh, you are. You've got a lot more, your nerve, got a lot more nerve, you're a lot more fearless.
That's right. And later on, I would have, I would have thought, well, you know, about liability issues and what if something happened to somebody, you know, that kind of stuff. But
when you were at that age, you just did it.
That's right.
When I first married into or first became associated with my wife's family, the lady I'm married to now that I've been with 20 years, they had a little restaurant called Texas Burger.
Mm-hmm.
And Texas Burger had a huge grill back behind the serving window where they did hamburgers at lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother-in-law was running the restaurant, and he and I were talking at the time about, well, could a blind person do this? And I said, yes, I think I could fry your burgers at lunch if mm-hmm. I kept my mind on what I was doing. In other words, if I knew how many burgers were there and where they were and kept my mind on how long they'd been on.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel a hamburger patty and tell its doneness by touching. By touch. But we sold the restaurant before I ever got a chance to do that. But I think I could have, I wouldn't have wanted to taken it on as a job to do every day, but I think I could have done it, and I would love to have seen if I could. Of course, by that time I was 40-something years old. I was old enough to try. I'd try anything.
Yeah.
But you were young, and you took these blind people around the corner to the fast food restaurant
mm-hmm.
and ordered food and found yourselves a table and sat down and ate
yep.
it and got up and walked back to your
mm-hmm.
place.
Mm-hmm.
So you were actually teaching some life skills.
I was actually teaching some life skills and having a lot of fun along with it. And but then that contract ended, and so I was involved with another contract with Associated Services for the Blind doing some similar work.
All right.
And then after that contract ended, then I was involved in a GED program for adults.
To teach to get blind adults their college equivalents.
Their high school equivalent.
That's what I mean, high school
mm-hmm,
equivalent
mm-hmm.
education.
And that was fun.
All right, Suzanne, you know, I have a feeling you and I could probably talk for 2 or 3 hours, but we're down now to about 10 or 12 minutes. So let's just take a short break, and then we want to because you went back to college after that, I think,
mm-hmm,
didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
We want to talk about that, and you're surely you use that music in some other way. Suzanne Erd from Philadelphia is our guest, and if she was a shy young girl, she got over it. And I'm proud of her, and I love her, and you're doing real well, and I'm enjoying the interview. And we'll be back in just a minute. Hang on. You might have gathered we have a live audience today.
We have folks from
all over the nation, a lot of folks from up in northeast Pennsylvania.
Good morning again. I'm Bob Bartlett.
That was November 2004. Hi, this is Phil Parr, and this November 2006,
we're going to do it again.
We're going to gather at the Sheraton Northeast in Houston, Texas, and have a big party. Opening ceremony Saturday morning. Cooking in the Dark with Dale Campbell and Cheryl coming Saturday afternoon. Saturday night, lots of dancing and great live music. We'll record a live blind handyman show Sunday morning, a live blind like me show Sunday afternoon, and Sunday night more dancing and great live music. If all this sounds like fun to you, why don't you email me and I'll send you the details. My email address is phil@philpar.net. That's phil@philpar.net. We'll see you this November in Houston. Suzanne Erd from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We have you out of college with your first degree, liberal arts degree, working at blind rehab, teaching life skills, teaching blind people to do things. learning really to be a blind adult yourself, actually, is what you were doing, and along with teaching these other people. What, were you ever able to do anything with music?
Yes, I was doing some playing at church, and
yeah.
That was good, playing and singing. Uh-huh. And I was also involved with the Choral Arts Society of Philadelphia, which is, occasionally is sung. We've sung with the Philadelphia Orchestra. And
really?
Yep. And Ricardo Muti actually pat one of my seeing eye dogs, and I wouldn't brush that dog's head for a week.
But you didn't. You never got. You never did any songwriting on your own, or.
Well, I guess I did some. I guess I've done some, but you know, it's funny because I think that's partly where my shy streak came in, and I never really publicized it, and I would just sort of write things in my head and not write them.
So you
down.
never did get to go to a recording studio and do a CD?
No.
That hasn't, you haven't done that yet.
I haven't done that yet, but
you're going to do it.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it.
Well, you know, I have a full 24-track studio.
Mm.
So we may need to talk.
We may need to talk.
You may need to come to Texas, and we'll produce your CD. And I know a couple of people that I need to get you in touch with that have done CDs, who are piano majors and piano players. And anyway, we'll talk about that.
All right.
But you went back to, you decided to go back to college and get yet another degree.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And the reason why I did it was because after I did the rehab stuff, I wound up working in the children and youth services in foster care and adoption. And that was really, really intense, very interesting. And it was my first position working in a non-blindness-related
thing.
Yep.
Now, what were you exactly, what were you doing?
I was a case manager, and I had a caseload of about 35, 36 families, and I had to do a couple of adoption home studies, and I did foster care and placement of kids into adoption.
How'd you get that job?
I took a civil service test, and I knew how to answer the questions, and so I got the job.
So you took a civil service test, mm-hmm. waited long enough, and you were next up, and they had to hire you.
That's right.
Because you had the degree.
Yep.
Yeah, I have another lady who did the same thing. They had to hire you. Now, did you went to and did home visits or home evaluations yourself?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's another thing you do when you're a kid that I wouldn't do now.
Oh, yes, you would. Come
yes,
on.
I would.
Yes, you would. You'd do anything now. What? Who? You had to have someone drive you there?
No, I took public transportation. I went all over the city. I never knew, you know, I didn't know what to expect. Just me and my dog, we would go anywhere. Fortunately, I never had to go into any high-rise projects.
Okay.
I was very, very fortunate.
Well, but you would have a hard time telling the degree of cleanliness of the house.
Well,
and there are a lot. Well, you know, I maybe not.
No, I don't think so, because I would do things like ask if I could use the ladies' room.
Okay.
You know, and you can tell You can tell a lot about the cleanliness of a place by the bathroom.
Or if you can also tell by odoriferous factors also. By the cleanliness of a house, and you, part of your job was to decide whether you thought these people were fit to adopt or not.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And by the time I received the cases, a lot of these families were already.
It had been
foster
decided.
Parents.
Okay.
They were foster parents of the kids.
Okay.
And so, I mean, yes, I had to check things out, but generally speaking, if they wouldn't be good foster parents, then they wouldn't be good adoptive parents.
Okay. That's true. But then you would go and say, they might have some foster children already living there. Well, that's quite a job for a blind lady. Just let me ask you this: Have you married? Have you been married, or are you?
No, I'm still looking.
You're still single,
and
you're still looking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we should have. I attempted to start a Love is Blind club at one time. I found out that that was a little harder to do than I thought it was. I took a little more on than I. Then I wanted to, not necessarily to marry blind people, to unite blind people to blind people, but there are a lot of sighted people who, you know, I've been married three times to three different sighted women. So you don't necessarily have to marry a blind person.
No.
In fact, I think it's better most times if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so your second degree is in what?
My second degree is in counseling psychology. I got that from the University of Pennsylvania.
Now, was this before or after you did this adoption thing?
This was after.
This was after?
Yeah. Because I felt that if I was going to continue at all in that field, then I felt that I wanted more education.
Some psychological training in psychology.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And it's funny because since then, when I was at Penn, I read a book that was, well, I read a few books that I thought were very important to me in my development. As I read a book by Michelle Fine and Adrian Ash. Adrian Ash is a blind professor. I'm not sure where she is now, but anyway, the book had to do with women and disability, and some of the essays in it were just sort of ordinary. Some of them were really, really good. But it was the first time that I ever saw anyone write specifically about women's issues disabled women's issues.
Yeah.
And I think, blind women and blind men, while we have so many things in common, that there are some issues that I think are unique to both groups.
Oh, there are many issues that are unique to both groups. It is, it is, as far as I'm concerned, much easier to be a blind man than to be a blind woman. That's sexist, though that may sound. I think it's true.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
Because of our society and because of the way we are. Now, but we're fast running out of time. You are not working now.
No.
And for what reason?
Well, I just got laid off. I had been working as a social work supervisor an agency here in Philadelphia. And unfortunately, due to budgetary constraints, they laid off roughly 80-some-odd people.
So they lost some grant money and weren't able to continue the program.
That's right. Well, the program sort of continued, but they cut back. They cut back some on supervisory staff.
Are you looking for a job, or have you decided not to look for a job?
Well, a little bit of both. I would consider a job, but I would want it to be a job where I felt that I could make a difference. And I think right now there are so many things that I would like to do for which I would not get paid, but which I think would really contribute to society in general. And I'd like to do that. There are a lot of things that are important to me. There are issues that I think are important that I would like to work on that may not make any money, but that I think I have something to contribute in. And
I'm doing one right now.
Mm-hmm.
Catch my drift? I'm
sure
doing
do.
One right now that
yep,
isn't
and that's
paying
why I'm here.
That isn't paying any money,
mm-hmm.
but I'm having a good time doing it, and I've learned a lot, and
mm-hmm.
I've learned a lot from you. Susanna Erd has been our guest. We are out of time, and I'll let you know when we get ready to run this on ACB and on For the People and all the places, different places we run. You've been a wonderful interview, and I thank you so much. Hold on just a minute.
All right.
Well, don't forget about Houston, Texas. However, if you're coming, you better make that reservation. We've already had to add rooms. We had 20, and we have exceeded that now. We've had to add some rooms, but we've got plenty. They say they'll rent us rooms at this $72 rate as long as they have rooms. And what that means, I don't know. But if you're coming, you better make your reservations, okay? All right. We'll do it again next week. Blind like me, if you're listening on FTP, stay tuned for a little session of country music called American Classic Country. If you're on ACB Radio, well, you missed it, didn't you? Thanks. I'm Phil Parr. See you next week. Bye-bye.